SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Happy Friday. Welcome to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. It is our edition of the show called June 25th, 2021, our final Friday in June. Thanks for being with us here on the show. I'm Craig Mish along with Davis Matic. We're recapping fantasy. We're recapping sports wagering. We're talking about everything here on the show. Fantasy, reality, Sports Grid 60. If you're tuning in to us, it's every day, noon to 2 Eastern here on SportsGrid.com. Davis, it is a happy Friday, a lot to get to here on the show. It'll be a golf weekend, I know, of course, soccer weekend as well. And in Canada, it is a really big weekend for the Montreal Canadiens as they advance to the Stanley Cup Finals. But Davis, they are only going to be allowing, because of Canadian restrictions, 3,000 fans to see the Stanley Cup Finals. Can you imagine how much those tickets are going to be going for?
They're going to be going for a lot. And, you know, it's so funny how small the world is. But I have been getting my updates on the Montreal Canadiens and the prices of these tickets and how excited everyone is from none other than Lou Dort, my favorite player for the Oklahoma City Thunder, who is a French Canadian, huge Montreal Canadiens fans. You know, he has been watching all the games, posting all the updates. And so I'm like locked in to the Montreal Canadiens because my favorite basketball player is a giant Canadiens fan. It's just, it's so funny how, you know, the world really is pretty small in this day and age.
Yeah, and a really cool story for sure. Congratulations to the Habs, of course, for advancing, no doubt. That's where we'll begin with our headlines here on the show. As look, Montreal is, you know, arguably among, if not the most storied NHL franchise, and they're back in the Cup. So, of course, this is going to be huge. Hey, Paul George and the Clippers showed no mercy last night against the Suns. They take game three. So you would think that based on that result, just throw out everything we were talking about yesterday, or at least I was, because they're right back in the series. Dallas Mavericks finalizing a deal to make Jason Kidd their next head coach. So maybe all the money that I lost on not selling Steve Nash's rookie cards, I can make back on Jason Kidd. Maybe somebody will believe that this is a good thing and I can get rid of those. The Cubs throw a team no-hitter last night against the Dodgers with Davies. What in the world is going on? I did not see that coming last night. Some wacky results in baseball for sure. We're going to get to all of those on the show as well. But let's give a little love to Paul George as we lead off the program today, who essentially is having to kind of carry the Los Angeles Clippers. And if they advance to the finals, who knows if Kawhi Leonard will be there. But Paul George says he is not doing it alone. They have other veterans on the team that have been in this spot before that are really hungry to not lose this time around.
You know, our leaders, myself, Kawhi, Pat Bev, Rondo, Marcus. I think it's what's so great about this team. We have so many vets that we can lean on. DeMarcus plays a role in leadership in the locker room. And it's just great. We got so many guys that want this. So many guys that are and lost in this moment, that, you know, we just stay together. We know that we have a real possibility to do something special. And, you know, we're going to give everything we have. I think what the beauty is we're happy with the results. Win, lose, or draw, this team is going to be happy with the results. We put so much into this season. We've invested so much into each other. We're going to live with the results. And I think that's the beauty of it.
Well, we're back on the Clippers here again. And Davis, when we looked at FanDuel yesterday, there were some really nice, juicy hedging odds, which we talked about. Maybe the series going seven and to kind of play this along the lines of doing that, you could have got that at 11-1. That's gone. No chance of that. The Clippers really showed yesterday, I think, that they have a chance not to just extend the series, but who knows, maybe even win it. Looks like two evenly matched teams. I don't know how the East is going to go. I'm kind of clueless in that series. I mean, Milwaukee, a huge favorite in game one. They lose outright. I don't know. But this one feels like two evenly matched teams without Kawhi Leonard.
They do feel pretty evenly matched, and that was what I was telling you yesterday. I said, look, the Clippers are not going to go quietly into the night, because I literally actually do think that even without Kawhi Leonard, the Clippers are probably the more complete team. You know, all due respect to Devin Booker, all due respect to Chris Paul, all due respect to DeAndre Ayton, Paul George is the best player in this series. And what do we know about NBA basketball? You know, a pretty big clip of the time, the team with the best player ends up winning the series. Now, did that happen in Nets Bucks? No, I don't think so. I think the team with the best player lost, because we saw a similar situation, what we're seeing with the Clippers. We saw injuries to key players. Harden was banged up. Kyrie didn't play the last three games of the series. And so if the Suns win here, I'm not going to be like, oh my gosh, you know, the wrong team won. It would be a great story. And I think the Clippers certainly giving Kawhi Leonard's minutes to Terrence Mann, that's a downgrade. I do have to say, though, Terrence Mann has, he has played himself into quite a large second contract in these playoffs, because he has been great defensively. He has done his job offensively, you know, not disrupted things for Paul George. And many NBA fans did not know who Terrence Mann was 2 weeks ago. And I think he has kind of been an unsung hero for the Clippers since Kawhi Leonard got injured.
Yeah, he's one of the names that not a lot of people talked about, and they are now. Good point by you, no question. Speaking of no question, tonight I got a big question, because it is game two of the Eastern Conference Finals. I felt like I watched enough Hawks-Bucks in game one to think that this could be a competitive series. So what am I missing in tonight's game, with Milwaukee being an 8-point favorite yet again on FanDuel? I mean, I don't get it. I guess the play is Milwaukee, because I will take the other side. More on that coming up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. We are back on the Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA tonight. I know a lot of folks did not expect it to be Hawks and Bucks, but that's kind of where we are. And Davis, this one to me is a little stunning, I have to say. Now, I tend to not be a prisoner of the moment, and I feel I understand sports wagering very well. And most oftentimes when I see something that looks too good to be true, I immediately either run or I take the other side. So I don't understand this one tonight, how Milwaukee is 8-point favorites again after what I saw in game one. So I'm going to need an explanation here. The total is 225. Atlanta went on the road. They got a miracle game from Trae Young. Yes, I understand that. But sometimes superstars are born in miracles, and maybe this is just what he's going to do. Like, why are we not ruling that out as a averaging 40 points? I mean, I saw Dwayne Wade, Davis, do this in Miami in his first go around in the playoffs, and he became a Hall of Famer after that. So tell me, before I hear from Nate McMillan, I need you to explain to me why the Bucks are 8-point favorites tonight, and why I'm so nuts in thinking it's the other side.
Well, I'm with you that it's the other side. I think after what we saw in game one, 8 points just seems like too much. I think I would have expected this line to be six, maybe six and a half. Eight is quite a bunch. You know, that is a three possession game at the end. And that's a lot of points. So I think there are a couple things going on here. You know, one, the Bucks were an amazing regular season team. They're fourth in the NBA in net rating. They were sixth in the NBA in offensive rating, and they were one of the best defenses in the NBA by defensive rating. They're a great rebounding team. They do not turn the ball over on offense very much. And the Hawks, they were a pretty league average team in the regular season. And so, you know, a lot of what goes into these models is based off of long-term performance. You know, of course, they are adjusting for coaching. And, you know, again, millions of dollars are being wagered on this game. If you go to the FanDuel Sportsbook right now, you would be able to place a pretty large wager on either side of this game. This would not be a game where FanDuel would limit you. This would not be a spot where they think that they are going to be open to too much exposure. They feel, you know, that this is a pretty quality line. And it's basically just about the Bucks being a good regular season team, assuming that Mike Budenholzer is going to play his starters, you know, more minutes, which has kind of been what we have been begging Mike Budenholzer to do for like the last three seasons. But I mean, I'm with you. I am taking Atlanta, and I'm prepared to feel stupid about it. But, you know, 8 points is a lot of points, Craig. 8 points is a lot.
I mean, the Hawks won game one outright. I mean, I don't know. It just, I guess this is a game where on Monday we come back and Milwaukee blows them out. I mean, I that's the only thing I can think of. But regardless of that, it's been a great coaching job, no doubt, from Nate McMillan and the Atlanta Hawks. And also a very big unsung hero, I think, on Atlanta. We've talked about him during the regular season, but he's getting talked about quite a bit here now in the postseason, is John Collins. Some people thought it was on the trading block a couple of months ago. Now he's leading his team potentially into the NBA Finals. And McMillan talked about Collins' contribution in the playoffs thus far.
He's been great for us. And as you mentioned, it's the second half, really being aggressive on the boards. You know, when teams are switching and doing the things that they are trying to do on the defensive end of the floor to really cover Trey, a lot of times they are trapping and switching a small on John and the big on Trey. You know, John has taken advantage of that in the post scoring, or he has taken advantage of that on the offensive glass. And, you know, so when teams are playing small ball and trying to, you know, guard John with the smallest player, he has really done a great job of taking advantage of that, whether he's posting up or getting on the offensive glass. His ability to, you know, spread the floor and pick and rolls, the versatility of pick and pop game when a five is guarding him. He has done a great job of recognizing that and taking advantage of who is guarding him out on the floor. You know, I think our guys as a whole they've done a better job of recognizing what the defense has given them and, you know, going to that matchup. And you have to win those matchups when you get them.
Pretty thorough explanation from Nate McMillan on John Collins and Davis. The Hawks, when you look at them, and I guess you could say this for a lot of teams, and it would be like the average fan. And I would call myself probably the average NBA fan, maybe knowing more, of course, because we do the show. And look, you may have trouble naming five guys on Milwaukee. I mean, that's definitely possible. But I think most people who follow the NBA know Middleton is there and know Holiday is there and Giannis. But I feel like the Hawks are being represented as a one-player team, essentially, with Trae Young. And it seems to be unfair, Davis, because Collins is pretty good, too.
Collins is pretty good. And I mean, you know, I'll be respect to John Collins, but it's actually Capella to me who is the Hawks' second best player. He is such a force defensively. And I guess what is most fascinating about this matchup is that the Bucks chose to go small in game one. They only played Brook Lopez 20 minutes and they played Pat Connaughton 30 minutes. So basically they were running, you know, PJ Tucker as their center, or I guess Giannis as their center, really, with PJ Tucker drawing the defensive. I mean, he had to guard John Collins, and John Collins responded in that game by going 11 for 16 from the floor, 23 points. But they have so much flexibility because Capella doesn't get played off the floor the way, I mean, you know, you saw those Miami Heat series. They would play big centers off the floor, and then those LeBron teams in Cleveland also got played off the floor by the death lineup for the Warriors, right? Draymond Green at center, Iguodala at power forward, Clay, Curry, and, you know, whoever is the fifth guy. Well, Capella, that doesn't really happen. He can stay on the floor against the Milwaukee Bucks small unit because he is so effective as a defender, so effective as a rebounder, and he does not crush them offensively, right? Game one, 19 rebounds, took 9 shots, made 6 of them, did not turn the ball over once, which is huge for centers against small ball lineups. A lot of the time you'll see centers. I call this the Dwight Howard syndrome, where if Dwight Howard, you know, prime Dwight Howard was playing in this matchup and he had PJ Tucker on him, he would be yelling at Trae Young. He'd say, "Trae, you got to get me the ball in the post." And then he would try and back PJ Tucker down and he'd miss the little bunny. Well, Capella doesn't do that. He knows his job. He knows what he is out there to do. And I think that the small series, if the Bucks continue to play that way, I think the small matchups actually favor the Hawks, which is a bold statement considering how good Brook Lopez has been this season.
In terms of McMillan as a coach, Davis, I've followed him as a player. I know that he's coached a couple different spots. Do you consider him among like the top coaches in the NBA? I wonder how you feel about him.
So I don't know if I view him as like a top coach, but I guess what is kind of interesting about Nate McMillan is he was coaching the Indiana Pacers and, you know, got fired, and his replacement also got fired, and now Rick Carlisle is coaching there. But I mean, 38 and 27 and 11 was his record once he took over with the Atlanta Hawks. So I think that you know, pretty clearly we are seeing that he is at least an above average NBA coach.
No doubt. I'm old enough to remember him playing on Seattle with Gary Payton and Sean Kemp on some of those really good teams in the championship, I think, against the Bulls. All right, coming up next, are you ready for 5 hours of baseball? Well, you're going to get it tonight. Yankees and Red Sox will play. The total is super high. So, yeah, we're headed down that road for sure. We've got a daily fantasy preview for you as well over on FanDuel. A little bit later in the show, Jim Sannis is going to join us. There are 2 NASCAR races this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, so we'll preview those. Gray Albright from Razzball will join us. We'll talk about the sticky stuff and how that affects fantasy. Plenty to come here on Fantasy Sports Today. So stay on the grid. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Friday Night Baseball, always some fun matchups, some compelling matchups, and I think we're getting into some really good divisional matchups, and also the Bay Battle will happen tonight with Oakland and San Francisco. That's always a lot of fun, too. So have a feeling we got some good games tonight to go over here against the spread, so let's get right to it and start with the rivalry that is the Yankees and Red Sox, which has basically been one-sided on the side of the Yankees for a while here, but now Boston is back. They're competitive for sure. Nick Pivetta actually pitched really well last night, almost pitched a no-hitter. And basically a pick 'em game tonight, Davis. We have Domingo Herman on the mound for New York. He's minus 120. Martin Perez, pitches for Boston. He is no great shakes either. And Boston, you can get $104 back on your money. But here's the bottom line. The total is 10.5. That's telling you the story there. It tells you just, Davis, just scratch out Herman and scratch out Martin Perez. They're not going to be factors in this game tonight, I don't think. I mean, I think both of them would be lucky to get five innings in. They're expecting a lot of offense. I don't know that that will be the case. The Yankees have not shown that all season long, and the Red Sox have. So that's one thing that you could possibly say. But in general, when these two teams play, they treat this like the postseason. There are a lot of taking pitches, a lot of pitching changes. It's almost like a National League game to a degree. Any lean on this one tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I already know you're going to go the other side of this one. You hate the Yankees. You're not a Stanton guy. But, I mean, the Yankees are going to throw 9 right-handed bats here against Martin Perez. They're going to go LeMahieu, Judge, Gary or Stanton, Voit, Glaber, and Duhar, Clint Frazier. And then I think they will probably try to replace Rougned Odor in this game so they can go fully right-handed, but maybe they go ahead and bat Odor as the lefty in the 9 hole. And, you know, basically the fact of the matter is the Red Sox cannot afford to do that with left-handed batters. Also, just as an aside, is there anything worse than nationally televised Yankees-Red Sox games? They take about 5 hours, probably going to be even longer tonight because we're going to get some foreign substance checks. I mean, I definitely will not be watching this game. But I mean, I have had the same line on the Yankees all season long. I've been wrong. My stance on the Yankees has been wrong all season long, which has been, you know, eventually they're going to figure it out. They are 4 games back of the Rays, 3.5 games back of the Red Sox. They really have not been hitting how you would anticipate a Yankees team to be hitting in terms of, you know, weighted on base average. They are far lower than we would anticipate them being. You know, they are not even a top 10 team in team weighted on base average. And if you look at their lineup, you'd be like, well, something has gone horribly wrong. And I guess the return of Luke Voit to the lineup is pretty big for them. I actually think Voit, because he doesn't have the same strikeout problems that Judge and Stanton do, is probably their best hitter. But I'm taking the Yankees tonight. And honestly, I think I would just take the over here. Just think that Herman and Perez just get bombed and that this turns into a classic Red Sox-Yankees, you know, 10-8 style game.
It could be. Could be. If the Yankees hit, then it is that kind of game tonight, no doubt. All right. Well, is this a World Series preview? The World Series preview, Davis, that nobody wants to see? Well, it could be. Oakland-San Francisco. Giants are just playing out of their minds. 3 straight wins again for them. And basically, it's another pick'em game. We got 2 pick'em games here on the board today. That's interesting. Oakland -112, San Francisco -104. So very little juice on either side. No real value here. The total is 8. Why? Well, Oakland goes to the National League. So, of course, they are going to be playing a man short. Also, Mark Canha got hurt yesterday. That's one of their key outfielders. So they're playing a little bit light, I would assume. And we know Sean Manaea is not getting a hit tonight. Well, we think Sean Manaea is not getting a hit tonight in San Francisco without the DH. Oakland is one of those teams that does benefit from that quite a bit. Johnny Cueto's had a okay year. Davis, not going to, you know, certainly be what he was, but I believe his ERA is like 4 or somewhere along those lines. Manaea has been very good for Oakland this season. But look, I mean, how do you go against the Giants? I mean, at some point, I just got to like sort of accept that they're a good team. It's really hard to do, but they are really good.
Yeah, they are very good. I'm sitting here looking at guys who have played DH for the Oakland Athletics over the last couple weeks. I have to say, in terms of American League teams losing the DH, the A's probably, of all the teams that are competing and have winning records, probably lose the least from their lineup when they sub out the DH, because Ramon Laureano is DH once, but he'll just play center field tonight for them, especially with Canha being banged up. Then they'll just play Matt Olson at first base. The last couple weeks, the A's have been playing just such weird combinations at first base. When Matt Olson doesn't play, they've been playing like Seth Brown and a couple other weird guys at first base. And then they also have had Mitch Moreland and their backup catcher, Sean Murphy, playing DH. So I think that in terms of like Yankees lose the DH, that's a giant deal because that takes out, you know, one of their 3 best bats. You know, Red Sox lose the DH, big deal. JD Martinez has to play the field. Even the Rays losing the DH, pretty big deal for them. for the A's, I actually don't think it's that big of a disadvantage. And I also think that Sean Manaea is a better pitcher right now than Johnny Cueto. 3.7 ERA for his career, better than that this season. Best K rate of his career, best walk rate of his career for Sean Manaea this season. He has a 19% strikeout minus walk rate. That's very good. Now, granted, the Giants are very good against left-handed starting pitching, right? They got Buster Posey in there. They got Wilmer Flores in there, a couple guys who are very good against lefties. But I am going to take Oakland tonight. No real lean on the total for this game, I don't think. Maybe slight lean on the under.
Okay. And then finally, the final game of the night will be played in Los Angeles, coming off the Cubs pitching a combined no-hitter yesterday. They are back today facing the Dodgers, and LA is a monster favorite again tonight. They are minus 190. You can get plus 160 on the Cubs. The total is 9.5. Reason for that, again, you have two starters today. One that can go nine innings, but they'll never let him pitch. They'll never let Jake Arrieta go nine anymore. This guy cannot get anybody out anymore. Throwing 85-mile-an-hour fastballs. Tony Gonsolin, Dave, is probably the better pitcher, but I believe he's coming off a start where he only threw three innings himself. I think he's coming back from injury, so it's taking some time with him as well. But I cannot back the Cubs. I after what I saw from Arrieta against Miami, I cannot back him. Probably ever. Like, you can't back Lester. I cannot back Arrieta the rest of the season. It's not happening. So I'll lay a run and a half with the Dodgers or nothing. That's it.
Yeah, I will lay the run and a half here. I will lay the money line and parlays. If you're a recreational sports bettor who likes to get your parlays in there, I think you can bet the over on the Dodgers team total. I honestly think you could even bet the over on the total for this game, because this is something I know. The Dodgers got extremely unlucky last night in that combined no-hitter. Zach Davies walked five guys, only struck out four. He was just giving up loud out after loud out after loud out to the Los Angeles Dodgers. They were making great contact. You know, they just were not quite able to transition it into runs. Also, Dodgers kind of a weird lineup last night. You know, they replaced Will Smith. They had Austin Barnes catching. Now, Barnes, generally speaking, is their assigned catcher for Clayton Kershaw. Not sure why he caught last night. Maybe Will Smith just needed a night off. So they'll have that bat replaced tonight. Also, Pujols played first base instead of Bellinger. Now, I maybe Pujols will play again tonight, but you know, I think their best alignment is Pollock in the outfield, Chris Taylor in the outfield with Gavin Lux at shortstop, and then Mookie Betts in the outfield with Bellinger at first base. Doesn't necessarily mean they will run that permutation tonight, but I think that is their best permutation. If they run their best possible lineup here against Arrieta, I mean, again, I got crushed on them last night in DFS with the Dodgers in that combined no-hitter, but I do think they are just going to absolutely take it to Arrieta in tonight's game.
Yeah, and look, there's just, for me, Jake Arrieta had two of the best years I've seen in the last decade from a pitcher, winning the Cy Young and helping the Cubs win the World Series. But I am telling you that his stuff is just not nearly the same. And listen, if you want to play narratives too, Dave, is how are the Dodgers feeling today after getting no hit going into this game tonight? You think they're feeling good about that? I don't think so. So I'm with you. Laying a run and a half seems to be the right move. One trend that's going on right now, Davis, I don't know how you feel about this, but the Astros have now won 11 straight games and look like the best team in the American League. We talked about them getting them at 5-1 on FanDuel to win the American League. I believe it's now down to 3-1. Do you believe in what you're seeing with the Astros this season? I know a lot of people are cynical about them.
I mean, the Astros are the best team in baseball, right? They have, this is true, they have a better offense than the Toronto Blue Jays. They are head and shoulders the number one team in weighted on base average. They are head and shoulders the number one team in weighted runs created plus. Just to give people an example, Houston, number one in weighted runs created plus, 127. The number two teams are the San Francisco Giants and the Los Angeles Dodgers, tied at 110. The Astros have also scored the most runs in baseball, 437 runs scored. The Dodgers are number two in 380. And it's not like they have no starting pitching, right? Like sometimes you'll see American many teams that do this and they have no starting pitching. They just have a great offense. But that is not true with the Astros. Maybe Verlander comes back. They for sure are going to make a move at the deadline. They got Framber Valdez back earlier than anticipated. They thought maybe he would be out all season. I think you can bet the Astros right now at any price and feel comfortable that you have the best team in the American League.
I mean, it's interesting because we're used to teams being this good with a couple of big Cy Young types. You mentioned Verlander, Gerrit Cole in the past. You could go around the league, Scherzer, DeGrom, Kershaw. But honestly, like Framber Valdez, Jose Urquidy, Zach Greinke, and Luis Garcia, like pretty good, like a pretty good staff. So Verlander back would be huge. I wonder if he'll come back in September. We'll be right back with our DFS preview.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. Those of you getting ready to play tonight's Friday night DFS slate, Davis, we're going to get into it here. And we got a full slate of games today. Go through some starting pitching and some, of course, hitting options. And when you play a full slate, I mean, is it basically just trying to piece it all together? Because it seems very overwhelming as opposed to the Wednesday and Thursday slate.
Yeah, I mean, you also have a little bit more freedom with the offenses that you choose. So, like, for example, last night's slate, we had six games on Thursday night, and everyone and their brother knew that the Toronto Blue Jays were going to score a lot of runs. It's not that it was a secret that the Blue Jays were going to beat up on Dean Kramer and the Baltimore Orioles, but only six games, and they were, you know, they had the highest team total. They were far and away the most appealing team to stack, so you saw huge ownership on Vlad and Semien and Bichette and Teoscar and even George Springer. So it's like, you know, just really long-term, you're not going to profitably play guys at 20, 30% owned in FanDuel contest. Doesn't mean you won't get lucky some night, but those are not the most plus EV ways to attack the situations. On a 14-game slate, sure, the Blue Jays tonight against Matt Harvey are going to be pretty popular, but even a team like the Astros against Willie Peralta, the Dodgers against Jake Arrieta, what would be, you know, a 10% owned stack on a six-game slate is going to turn in to like a 4% owned stack on this slate because there are just so many different options. So definitely something to keep in mind as you build.
All right, let's get into our lineups tonight over on FanDuel. We'll start with the pitchers. Framber Valdez going for 12 straight wins with the Houston Astros. He's on the mound tonight, 10,700. Sean Manaea, who we just discussed, 9,400 at the Giants. Chris Paddock of the Padres, they're playing well, 8,500. And then Alek Manoah, I mean, I guess, gosh, if he could get through five innings, he may be worth a win, but he has not pitched well at all for the Jays, but seemingly a pretty good matchup tonight.
Yeah, very good matchup for Alek Manoah. And honestly, it's just kind of about being able to afford a lot of the great bats we have going in this slate, a lot of very expensive Blue Jays, a lot of very expensive Dodgers. And we actually have Manoah projected for one of the best strikeout rates of any pitcher going in this slate. Now, he has to get through five innings for those strikeouts to be worth anything, but we know the Baltimore Orioles strike out a ton. It is a very good run scoring environment, but only a four-run team total for the Baltimore Orioles, so feel pretty good about Manoah. Paddock has finally started to put it together a little bit. You know, Paddock has basically been a guy that fantasy baseball people have been obsessed with since he got called up. He's shown us flashes, and then he's gotten hurt or, you know, walked too many guys, or his fastball is too straight, or the off-speed stuff isn't working, you know, yada, yada, so on and so forth. But as I literally think I've brought this up every time the Diamondbacks have been on a slate this week. It's like they just cannot hit. They just absolutely cannot hit the baseball, and that is a pretty big problem. Sean Manaea, we have a huge projection on him. He goes fairly deep into games. He has one of our largest batters faced projections in this slate. Pretty low team total for the San Francisco Giants, 3.5 projected runs, good price. And then, you know, Carlos Rodon is also pitching, but he costs 11.2. Framber Valdez is 500 cheaper. And the matchup against the Detroit Tigers, that's my favorite matchup to attack with starting pitchers in daily fantasy.
All right, let's move over to first base. And I believe this is the highest price I've seen Vladimir Guerrero Jr. all season. He had another home run last night. We're going to talk about the home run leaders in a minute. $4,800 for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. tonight in the Blue Jays. Cody Bellinger is at $3,800. You can save $1,000 for Bellinger tonight over Guerrero. Jose Abreu is at $3,300. And then I see the John Lester hate has creeped in here because Jesus Aguilar at $2,600 tonight for Miami.
Yeah, I mean, Craig, when you opened up the games this morning and you started to look over, I bet you knew. I bet if I would have sent you an email this morning and I said, Craig, what first baseman do you think I'm throwing in there? I bet you could have guessed Jesus Aguilar going to be in there against John Lester. There's not very many Miami Marlins that are going to be making the sheet with how poorly they're hitting right now. But Jesus Aguilar against John Lester, you better believe he makes it in there. Jose Abreu, you know, just pretty much any time Abreu is below 3,500 and has the platoon advantage tonight against Yusei Kikuchi, he is going to make it into our list. I want as many Dodgers as possible tonight. I love all of them. I love, you know, Lux and Bellinger and Muncy. Like, they are all just fantastic plays. $3,800 for Bellinger against Arrieta. Great spot. And, I mean, Vlad, yes, he is 4,800. But I have never seen FanDuel post a team total of 6.5 for a team outside of Coors Field before. I've never seen it. But a 6.5 team total for the Toronto Blue Jays tonight. Vlad, their best hitter. This is a very reasonable price for his services.
By the way, with also just something to keep an eye on with Miami there, Garrett Cooper, I believe, is going to be back tonight if they give Aguilar. I mean, the offense, as you said, is not hitting. If they give Aguilar a day off, it could come tonight with Cooper playing first base. So something to keep an eye on there. Okay, over to second base we go. Max Muncy of the Dodgers. Yes, I like that one. $3,600. Ozzie Albies, I said yesterday, I don't know. Acuna's out. Davis said it doesn't matter. He was right. Hit a home run. $3,300. Ty France, $2,900. Nick Solak, one of my favorite players on the Rangers. I think he's going to be a good player. It's just it's coming along. $2,600 for him tonight.
Yeah, Nick Solak. I mean, I want to, you know, I just wanted to include some cheaper hitters here in this, you know, in the slate because we got Vlad in here. We got expensive starting pitchers. We got Dodgers, so we need some cheap guys. Solak cheap, gonna have the platoon advantage tonight. So we always kind of like that. Mike Minor pitching for the Kansas City Royals tonight. Then, you know, same deal for Ty France. Difficult matchup against Rodon. But, you know, of all the calls I made in the preseason, Ty France definitely one of the better ones. When he has not been hurt, he has been a key contributor in fantasy baseball. Ozzie Albies, not as appealing as he was the other night when the Braves had that insane team total. They just have a 5-run team total tonight instead of 5.5. But this Gutierrez fella for the Reds has just been very okay. You know, not he looks fearsome. He's like a big giant guy with like neck tattoos and stuff. But he's just an average major league starting pitcher, it looks like. And then Max Muncy, one of the highest price options. And of course, Marcus Semien, not on this list, but is our highest projected second baseman, but very expensive.
All right, let's move over and take a look at third base. We have Nolan Arenado of the Cardinals at $3,300. Keep Ryan Hayes of the Pirates at $3,200. Jonathan India at $2,900 on the Reds. And then with Alex Bregman out, Abraham Toro has been getting some time at third base. He is $2,500. Arenado was interested yesterday, Davis, after the game. Cardinals lost again to the Pittsburgh Pirates. And their outfielder, Tommy Edmonds, said after the game that they are basically not preparing, essentially, for the starting pitcher on a daily basis, which really fired the media up in St. Louis to hear that. The manager didn't dispute it, said they are doing it. They're just not doing a good job at it. So boy, the Cardinals are under some real heat. I believe they've only scored like 4 runs in the last 2 weeks or something insane. But Arenado, 3,300, maybe this is the breakout.
I mean, I love Nolan Arenado so much, and I think he is such a skilled player. The Cardinals are not going to be a very good team this year, which is all right, whatever. You know, they need to add some more bats. I mean, they called up that guy Newt Barr the other night, who we're like, this can't possibly be a real name. It's like sometimes it just doesn't happen, but Nolan Arenado still retains all the same skills he has had. Cabrian Hayes has the platoon advantage against K.H. Kim. You know, he of the 88-mile-an-hour fastball. Jonathan India, so we talk a lot about projection systems taking a while to catch up to guys to figure out if they're any good or not. India, because his batted ball profile has been so good, does not really strike out, makes a ton of contact, and has a little bit of speed, a little bit of power. The projection systems have caught on to him pretty quickly. Like, they are already rating him very highly, which I just always find that to be interesting. And then Abraham Toro, definitely not a household name. And I don't know if it's the fact that his name is so cool that he's a switch hitter. Like, I don't know what it is, but I am just always drawn to this guy. He also he put together some insane seasons in the minor leagues, mm-hmm. like really high weighted on base average, stole bases, hit home runs. So I kind of am just perpetually waiting for the Abraham Toro breakout.
Yeah, I mean, he may play third base next year and Bregman plays short. Very possible that he's their starting third base because Correa is going to leave, I think, after the year. So you could see him a lot next year. Okay, now over to shortstop. We have Bo Bichette, always a threat to homer and steal, 4,300. Javi Baez, Mr. Boomer Bust, 3,300. Wander Franco inching up on FanDuel, Davis, up to 3,000, 2,500, 2,800, 3,000. Got to keep moving him up. And Josh Rojas, who got off to that really good start for the Arizona Diamondbacks, but I don't think he's had the same success over the last month.
Yeah, no, he's been very like whatever. He looks decent in our projections, but a cheap leadoff hitter. We need a couple cheap guys. I said I would keep Wander Franco in here until FanDuel got him above 3,000. They almost got him there, got him to 3,000 today. So we are going to keep Wander Franco in our list. Javi Baez. I mean, I guess Gonsolin is like a good starting pitcher, and of course the Dodgers bullpen is pretty good, but Javi Baez at 3,300, he's going to be, I mean, literally, he will be 1% owned tonight in your contest on FanDuel. Always has that home run and steal upside. And then Bo Bichette. I mean, Bo Bichette is quietly going to hit 30 home runs, 35 home runs, and steal 20 bases this season. He is you're going to have to really pay through the nose for him in fantasy next season. So just more ways to get exposure to that Blue Jays offense.
Yeah, he's a first-round pick next year in fantasy baseball, no question. All right, let's go to the outfield. You can't price Yordan Alvarez high enough. This guy has just been unbelievable. He is 4,100 for Houston tonight. Whit Merrifield for the Royals is 3,600. Adalys Garcia, 3,500. Alex Verdugo of the Red Sox, 3,100. And I believe Randall Grichuk will play tonight. That's never a guarantee because now it's with Springer back. He could sit. But Springer, by the way, didn't even play yesterday. Got a day off after coming back off the injured list. I believe he'll play tonight, probably. But that's a lineup thing. You got to double check.
Yeah, well, they will probably keep playing Grichuk until Springer gets fully healthy. Because they actually have just had Vlad playing first base. And then they have mm-hmm. been subbing in, you know, just different guys at the DH. And then actually Springer right. first came back when they were playing the Marlins. So they were in that, they were in the National League. I think probably what they'll do is they'll DH Springer while Sounds he is right. recovering from this injury and then play Grichuk out there in the field. Of course, I always like Randall Grichuk when the Blue Jays are going to be chalked because Grichuk is the one that doesn't get owned. Grichuk is the one that kind of gets forgotten mm-hmm. by people playing DFS. Verdugo, good matchup against Domingo Herman, huge total in that game, huge total for the Red Sox. Adalys Garcia, you were giving me a hard time about throwing him. Well, actually, you weren't giving me a hard time. We were giving the fantasy baseball community a hard time about kind of forgetting that Adalys Garcia has all this power. I think it was Wednesday he was in the rundown. He hit 2 home runs, went 2 for 5 with those home runs. He remains the same guy, and he also has the platoon advantage against Minor tonight. Whit Merrifield is so underrated in fantasy baseball, steals bases, you know, is going to hit 20 home runs, going to hit, you know, 25 doubles. That's just what he does. And then you're right. I mean, Yordan Álvarez, what is even the appropriate price for him? He's so good.
Yeah, he should be 4,500. By the way, you think the Royals will trade Whit Merrifield? Let's talk of that again.
Please, no. I can't do this. No.
Could be. We'll see. All right, we got to take a break on Fantasy Sports Today. Update from the Travelers coming up next. If there's any soccer going on, we'll let you know about that as well as we wrap up this first hour of Fantasy Sports Today. Stay on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back. We got Chris coming up with the update, top of the hour. Hour two, we will start off by hearing from Kyle Schwarber. He is the hottest baseball player on the planet. How is he getting it done? We'll find out. So, Davis, what's more interesting for you this weekend amongst the things that I am not as interested in? Although golf, I would say that I am interested in. I'm going to play tomorrow. Travelers or Euro Cup? What is on the menu for the weekend for you?
Well, I am definitely going to be locked into the European Championships. We kick back off tomorrow around noon Eastern time. We have a very interesting leaderboard playing out at the Travelers Championship. Bubba Watson is leading right now. He's fired back-to-back 66s, 8 under par. Russell Henley, who was having a good weekend at the U.S. Open, also is sitting here at 7 under par. But kind of a weird event. Cantlay is 2 under par. He hasn't teed off yet today. Dustin Johnson right up against the cut line. So, these shorter golf courses where it's more about accuracy, you got to figure out your wedges. It generally speaking gives us a different type of leaderboard, which I don't mind. I also love, one of my favorite storylines in golf is when random guys who are 55 turn up, right? When Von Taylor shows up on the leaderboard, or when Phil shows up on the leaderboard. Like I always kind of enjoy those events.
Yeah, and I do too. And I think that's what made, you know, the PGA Championship so exciting. When is the British Open, by the way, this year? Any clue? Is it happening this year, by the way? I haven't even heard anything.
So the British Open was it was teetering on whether or not it was going to happen. It is officially happening. It begins in the second week of July. They're playing it at the Royal St. George's Golf Club in Kent. The COVID protocols are going to be very strict. So it remains, some American players may choose not to go, but it is happening.
All right, good. We'll cover that for you for sure. That's the week of the All-Star break, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, coming up next, we have Chris with the update. We'll go over Major League Baseball's home run leaders and what this may look like at the end of the season. You're watching Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid. We'll be back after Chris's update.